Good evening, my friends. I'm Eric Olson, and it's time once again for America's Most Haunted Radio, bringing together the finest minds and personalities from across the paranormal spectrum. With me, as always, is my America's Most Haunted co-author and co-host, the world-famous haunted housewife, Teresa RG. How are you doing, Teresa?
Doing good. Happy to be resting after a very, very busy month and a half.
It has been a whirlwind. Well, why don't you tell us about what's been going on most recently? The Haunted Housewives have been putting on an astonishing array of benefits.
Well, once Halloween comes and the Ghost Walk is over, we start our fundraising season. So we've done 3 fundraisers on top of the book event we did at the Knickerbocker. So we had our annual Para-X at the Lake County History Center, which was awesome. We raised thousands of dollars for the History Center in one evening. And then that was followed by our night at the Knickerbocker, which was amazing as always. The Knickerbocker, of course, one of America's most haunted and featured in our book. And then the next weekend, back-to-back fundraisers again, one for Greenwood Farm in Richmond Heights and the other for the historic Painesville Depot. And those were very, very chilly, frigid, cold nights, but everyone came out in force and every one of those events sold out. So it was awesome.
Can you give us a little bit of insight into just anything in particular that happened at any one of those? How are they similar and how are they different from each other?
Well, it's different every time we go. What was most interesting probably about the last two fundraisers, and that was the Greenwood Farm and the Painesville Depot, is Greenwood is a 17-acre property with 3 buildings on it. And we've done fundraisers there before, but we were hesitant to go back because of the weather, because there's no heat in these buildings. And we told them, you know, we really can't bring people out in November if there's no heat. And they assured us that they had raised enough money from previous fundraisers to put a heating system in. So when we went back there last Friday, there was indeed heat in the manor house. And that was really awesome to see the fruits of our labor come to fruition with them actually putting heat in the building. And there was an interesting thing that happened as well. One of our guests had been to Greenwood Farm. She was a caretaker for one of the Greenwood children when she was still alive. So we had some very interesting things happen around her, and that is actually written up, and that story's on the website. So that was amazing. She had no idea till she drove up the driveway that she was going to a ghost hunt fundraiser at a place that she had spent a year. So it was really, really cool.
All right. Well, as people know, we've had a break from the radio show for several weeks because, boy, the book release schedule was just madness. In a good way, we've been just extraordinarily busy with the media. What are some of the highlights of that for you?
Highlights of the book release?
Yes.
The events? Oh, well, the best part of the book release, besides the actual party at the Willoughby Cole, which of course is my favorite place. When we went back to the Knickerbocker, it was so cool to go back there and see how that place had even changed, because we know Peg changes the decor in the rooms on a regular basis. And we'd been there, it's been less than a year since we had been back, but every room was different. It was absolutely amazing to see the work that she had done and everything that she had put into that place. I mean, she really cares for that building as if it's her child. And the guests were really, really enthralled with everything. And we had a lot of first-timers there, that people who had never ghost hunted, not only never ghost hunted at the Knickerbocker, they had never been on a ghost hunt before. So we showed them this beautiful, magnificent building and all these gorgeous rooms, and then we took them down to the basement and scared the crap out of them. So it was really quite amazing for them to experience that along with us. And the Knickerbocker is always different, always changing. I love it. It's like it's a person. It really is. It has its own personality. And that is thanks to Peg for everything she does for that place.
Well, as a ghost hunting team, the Haunted Housewives are particularly committed to history. And, of course, that shows with the benefits and your involvement with helping to sustain and promote these various places. But talk about commitment to history. How about Peg Knickerbocker?
Yeah, she really is amazing. I mean, she just poured her heart and her soul into that building, into that place. And just the strange things that happen around it, the way that she had the building and then and got it back, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. And like she told, when she addressed the guests, she said, this is a place where you don't just get, you know, one-word answers with EVPs. You have conversations with these spirits. And we found that to be true, of course. We had up in the Angel Room, we had an EVP. We asked, you know, who are we speaking with? And it came Milo Arnold, and he was one of the original owners of the building. So that kind of stuff is amazing. And I really think that part of the reason that building is so active is because the spirits there love Peg, and they love Merle Knickerbocker, and they know how much that she is trying to preserve their memory. And I think that makes them a little more active and just grateful. So I think that's one of the reasons why they respond so well to people when they come and ghost hunt there.
What little bit of history, new bit of history, did we learn at the Knickerbocker? Peg gave a nice little speech and updated us on various things. What did you come away with that was new, even from what we had heard and wrote about in the book?
Well, what Peg likes to talk about is the spiritualist connection with the Knickerbocker. And, you know, when we were researching the book, we didn't find a whole lot of that. We couldn't find a lot of documentation about the spiritual connection, except that that the Arnolds were from Casadega, which is where the spiritualist movement started here in the United States. But I think that through some of her research and documents that she's found and conversations that have been recorded in newspaper accounts and letters, I think that she did confirm a little bit more that there was definitely a spiritualist connection there. And some of the guests that have stopped at the Knickerbocker, she said how many presidents had stayed there? This I wasn't that aware of. I knew that many dignitaries had stopped there. But I think she named at least two United States presidents that had stopped and stayed at the building at one point.
Yeah, I think she even said three. And they were all right in that late 1800s, early 1900s. Period.
That was kind of amazing. And again, it's like an ongoing process when these things are discovered. And even in we actually did write the book. It was practically 2 years ago. But things that have changed since the information that we put in our book, I mean, my God, we could have wrote an entire book just on the Knickerbocker.
So now that the book has been out for, 6 weeks or so, I guess, came out the 30th of September. It's hard to believe that much time has passed. On the one hand, it seems like it was just yesterday. On the other hand, it seems like a lifetime. What is your sense of the overall response to the book?
I think the book has been very well received. I think people are actually enjoying it very much. I think that they see the difference in our book and the other books similar that are out there. I mean, we have not just cataloged a list of haunted locations, and that's what makes our book different. We have gone in depth and found new information and done our own research on these places. And of course, you know, the personal experiences make it a little bit more, it's going to make it different than other books as well, because the personal experiences recorded in our book are not in other people's books. But I just think that people see the difference, that we went beyond just telling a ghost story, and we went beyond just telling the history too. So we combine those in the very best ways, and I think people actually appreciate that. I haven't heard anything negative. The only negative thing I've ever heard about our book was a review on Amazon, and this woman basically ripped me personally apart because she didn't like my name, The Haunted Housewife, and she says that I gave absolutely no proof of anything that happened in my book, and I didn't put any sort of scientific explanation for anything, which I found very funny because we never claimed we were doing scientific research, and we never claimed to have proof. These were historic accounts, research, and stories told by people that we know and trust. So I think the mistake was on her part, expecting it to be something different than it was.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I think it really literally was the same review because, like you say, it really is the only thing negative that I've seen either. And even within that context, she still said that it was very well written. And the stories were really well told, and the stories were very compelling. So, hey, I guess I'll take that. But the other part, which just shows you, you know, how easy it is for things to be misunderstood. There was complaints, and I guess blaming us, because, you know, who else, that there was no table of contents, there was no index, and there were no notes. Well, we had no idea that there wouldn't be a table of contents. We provided all of the links and the sources. We built into the manuscript. We put in links all throughout it. We assumed that those would be entered into an index. And it just shows you, you know, when you're out in the real world, things rarely turn out exactly the way you expect them to. I mean, we would have loved nothing better than for there to be more pictures, for there to be color pictures. We thought there would be.
Yeah, we did.
And, you know, certainly a table of contents and an index and, you know, a list of references, because that was one of the things we were very meticulous about. We wanted to indicate the newspaper account from 1898 that we quoted directly from, that we were able to chase down. In particular, that's applicable to Bobby Mackey's, to the stories, the history associated with that, to the LEMP. I mean, there's a lot of misinformation that's out there that's just kind of taken as received wisdom that we were able to, I think, correct. And by tracing down, tracking down these original sources, and, you know, some of it is available on the internet, a lot of it still is not. And, you know, that was something else we really, I'd say, was reinforced. Everyone knows that you need to be very, very careful, at least they should know by now, with information that you pick up on the internet. The internet needs to document its sources just like anyone else does, and you can't just take things at face value. So, yeah, it's been a really, really interesting process. For the most part, extremely gratifying. I was able to, and was honored and privileged to speak at the Ohio Paranormal Gathering, and it was really, really nice to see that a pretty good percentage of the people who were there, I'd say a quarter, already had the book. Maybe it was 20%. It was a significant number. So I was able to talk to them about it and ask them about it, and they said some of the exact same things that you just said. They really appreciated the history behind it, the fact that we really did try to approach things in a neutral manner, that we didn't seem to have any particular agenda, that when the information, when the trail led to refuting something, that we took that path. When the path led to confirming something as having a historical basis, we took that path. And that we, you know, acknowledged when there is controversy out there, just say, for example, regarding the whole the ghost hunter's tale from the Queen Mary, but we did not jump on any particular bandwagons. We just kind of let the facts speak for themselves and allowed people to, we presented the facts and we suggested people come to their own conclusions. You know, we're not looking to jump in any one particular direction, just let the chips fall where they may. It was very nice to see that at least within the paranormal community, that people are picking up on that and that they find that process interesting, and that there is something at least somewhat different from most of what's going on out there. So what's coming up?
Right now, we are, the Haunted Housewives are on hiatus. We are going to take a break from everything that we do, and we are in the process of moving our office into the second floor of Willoughby Cole, and we will be stationed out of there from now on after we get everything done, and hopefully we'll start doing some public and private events there at Willoughby Cole, but that's going to take some work. The place needs a little bit of renovations and some alterations made to it before we can do that on a regular basis. But right now we're taking a break. It's time to get back to my family and do more of the housewife stuff than the haunted stuff, at least till after the holidays, and then we'll see what happens in the spring.
Speaking of Willoughby Cole, after we had the gala, really kind of pretty much unalloyed success, that event. That's kind of our one thing that just couldn't have gone a whole lot better than it did. Once in a while, things work out exactly the way you would hope, that September 30th event. Talk about some of the things that have happened since that event, and it would seem to be at least somewhat, if not caused by that event, then at least in a corollary, along with the fact that we've been able to shed so much new light on Willoughby Cole.
I'm sorry, you just lost me. What are you asking me a question?
Yeah, what's been going on at Willoughby Cole as a result of all this new attention that's come from the book and book-related events?
Oh, well, we've been inundated with requests to investigate. That's the main thing that's happened. I mean, we're getting requests from all over the United States. People want to come in and investigate. And unfortunately, we are not able to honor those requests quite yet. But maybe we will. We've even had a little bit of interest from one of the TV shows, but right now that is on the back burner. So we're going to see what plays out, and maybe Willoughby Cole will become even more famous than it has become because of our book. But again, there's got to be some work done before we can do that. I tell you, when we had our book release party, having 200 people up on that top floor, I was very nervous. I wasn't sure that place could hold that many people on that floor. But Jay assured us that it could, and everything went as planned, and nobody got hurt. So, but before we bring any more people up there, we got to do a little work.
Well, it isn't even the third floor. It's getting up to the third floor.
Yes. They don't have the proper steps in there. So those are things that need to be addressed before we can really bring people in. But we were very lucky that we were able to do what we did and have been there so many times. Because, you know, it's just been me and Kathy doing everything there. And for the two of us, it's okay. But, you know, it comes to, you get issues of liability and insurance and housing and code violations and things like that when you bring the public in. Those type of things have to be addressed, which is why we warn ghost hunters to never go anywhere without permission, because you don't know if the building that you think is really creepy and you want to go in there and you want to ghost hunt and it seems really cool, you don't know if it's safe. You don't know if there's asbestos, if lead paint, if the floors are going to cave in, if there's holes in the roofs, if there's critters living in there. So you have to be careful. Never investigate without permission. And if you're going to be hosting events, as Kathy and I have done in the past, remember, it's your reputation and your liability, so you have to make sure you get your ducks in a row before you can do that.
Yeah, there really are very legitimate causes to use caution. Just look at how much, just the people that we talk to, the people we've interviewed over the last couple of years on the show, look how many have respiratory problems. You know, when you see Zach now, every episode of Ghost Adventures, he's got to wear that respirator. I mean, there are real and legitimate issues in these old, falling apart, untended buildings.
Yeah, and that is, and it's not for everybody. I mean, just like the last ghost hunts we did, it's not so much a respiratory issue when we were at Greenwood, but it was very, very cold. I mean, and we had to trek outside. It's a 17-acre property. And, you know, if you're having issues where you shouldn't be outside, you shouldn't be exposed to the cold, or you have trouble walking, you have to think about these things. The event we did the following night at the Painesville Depot, let me tell you, that place is full of dust, and you walk in there and you immediately started coughing. And some people did have issues where they had to step outside. You have to be aware of these things when you go in. You know, it's not a bad idea to bring a mask or breathing, or especially if you're asthmatic, and make sure you have your inhaler with you. These are things you don't think about, and we do see it. We've seen it on TV and in Ghost Adventures. Zach does it, and I think it's a good thing that he has done that. He's not wearing that because it makes him look cool. He's wearing that because he has to.
No, he looks like an alien.
Yeah. So, you know, there are things you need to think about before just going in. It's, now, a lot of places that are set up for this, they already have those things in order. You know, when you go to a place like the Ohio State Reformatory, they warn you, watch out for the lead paint and the steps, and they pretty much have it under control, and they, you know what to expect. At least they think they know what you need to have with you and to expect when you're there. But some of these newer places, these newly discovered places, you don't know what's going on. And I tell you, the last thing the owners need is somebody to sue them because they fell or got injured on a ghost hunt. So, you know, these are all things you have to keep in mind and be aware of. There are real dangers and hazards to ghost hunting besides spiritual attachments and having a ghost follow you home or messing with you mentally or emotionally. These are real world problems that you have to think about before trekking on an adventure like this.
Yeah, no matter how hungry you are, don't eat the paint chips.
No, not a good idea. You know, there was once, I remember the first time I went to the Ohio State Reformatory, somebody told me, don't take anything from the reformatory. I'm like, well, I'm not going to steal anything. Why would I do that? And they're like, no, don't even take a rock. Don't take a paint chip. Don't take anything, because if you do, a ghost will follow you home. Now, this was many years ago. So, of course, I did. I took paint chips, and I put them in a little box, and I still have them. So.
Is there a ghost in there?
Not me, but one followed Kathy home, but I don't think she took any paint chips with her. But, you know, that's what people worry about, those kind of things. But, you know, I think the danger in the paint chip was eating it, not just having it with you. So.
All right. Well, we know this is a special day for you, Teresa, so we'll let you go. You want to let the listeners know?
Oh, it's my anniversary, 14 years of wedded bliss, and my husband has provided this magnificent castle and treated me like a princess for 14 years, and we will be out celebrating for the day.
Well, good for you. You got to stop and smell the roses every now and then.
If he gets me roses, we'll see.
I'm sure he will, or something equivalent. All right, well, it'll be really nice to get back to our kind of regular format. Hopefully we will get that all together by next week. We've been having to deal with various technical issues of going to an all-recorded format because we're joining the podcast generation, as we've been advised from many different directions, and that first show last week had some positive things about it, but we're still working on some of the technical difficulties and details of going from live and unproduced to something that's hopefully a little more listenable on the audio front and a little bit of production and music and whatnot. So I think by next week we'll have all of that together. On top of everything else, my computer of 4 years, my reliable desktop is now, it's on its last legs. It will only open in safe mode, and we're just trying to pull all the really vital information off of it and hope that we can retrieve what's on there. Fortunately, these days, with so much of it being on the cloud, I don't think anything super critical will be left on the computer, but it's yet another issue. All right, well, have a great day and evening, and hopefully we will be able to get back to normal and be conducting our interviews jointly next week. Have a great anniversary, and we'll talk real soon.
All right, thank you, and I hope your computer doesn't die.
Oh, me too.
America's Most Haunted, The Secrets of Famous Paranormal Places is now an epic book from Berkeley Penguin. History, legends, investigations, interviews, and profiles of America's 10 most haunted hotspots by Eric Olson and haunted housewife Teresa Argy. Be sure to join us on Twitter and Facebook at AM Haunted, Pinterest at America's Most Haunted, and our website, americas-most-haunted.com. And here every week on America's Most Haunted Radio with all the top names in the paranormal field.
Laura Lynn Lute, psychic, medium, and author lecturer, has given thousands of psychic readings over the last 20 years. She specializes in helping families who have difficulties with closure after a loved one's passing. Her titles include Healing with Angel Rays and ABCs of Psychic Abilities. And those are book titles, by the way. She teaches on various subjects in metaphysics, where she has been invited to share her insights on a national level many, many, many And I do mean many, many times. Really super cool. And boy, am I excited about this, because I get to MC for the psychic medium and visionary. Laura Lynn will be appearing at the Kent stage on Wednesday. That's this Wednesday, November 19th. Come on out. It's your chance to be on the receiving end of her gifts when she shares with the audience her techniques for tapping into the unknown. See if you can learn to tap into yourself and maybe even loved ones who have passed on. There will also be a multitude of fascinating psychic demonstrations to enjoy, and you may be randomly selected to receive a reading. After the show, 10 people will be randomly chosen to do a ghost hunt at the Kent stage. And my goodness, I get to MC all this. I am tingling with anticipation. Welcome, Laura Lynn, to America's Most Haunted.
Thank you, Eric. You make me want to be part of that audience.
Well, you will certainly be there, will you not?
I sure will be. I'm very excited about it. I'm going to have a great time. It's been something that I've been looking forward to for a long time now, to be able to not only demonstrate the psychic ability itself for the participant, but to also explain how I'm doing it in the background. So it's going to be very exciting.
Why don't you give us a little bit of background on your gift? And I know you've been very active for the last 20 years. When we first met, just last week, you were telling me you are the top-rated psychic in all of Ohio. How does all of this work?
Well, that is an opinion based on a wonderful website, and it's basically because I have more reviews than anybody else in the state. So it is what is based on Google Analytics. Is that what it's called?
Analytics.
Yes, analytics. But that's a lot of fun. But I would say that what I am is a psychic medium who just thoroughly enjoys speaking to spirit. And I have I sincerely appreciate spirit on all different levels, as regarding ghosts and talking with them, tapping with them, working through their process, what's happening in their spirit world. And so I don't know, I guess I would just say I thoroughly love what I do, what my calling is.
How did all this get started? When did you first become aware that you had this gift, this talent? Although, there are some who consider it a mixed blessing.
Right. Well, I didn't even realize it was a gift, Eric. I started tapping in or seeing spirits. My first encounter was actually with an angel when I was 5 years old. And to me, it was very natural because we were talking about it, angels in Bible school. And to me, it was like, well, of course you're going to see an angel. Why wouldn't you? And then after that, I started seeing other types of spirits, such as Native Americans in the woods, and started seeing men in top hats and women in these beautiful dresses that didn't look like anything I was used to, you know, growing up in the 70s. So it was very interesting, but to me it was very natural. It didn't frighten me at any level at all until maybe later when some other things started happening. But I really feel that most children do, on some level, tap in. I just happen to be in a space and time that, in my own story, that I was able to continue with it in a much deeper level.
Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Jackson Township in Stark County, Ohio, and there's an interesting story there. One of the first encounters that I did have after the angel, I looked out my bedroom window and I saw these Native Americans in the backyard and throughout the woods, and I was pretty amazed because this group of people were doing all kinds of things I've never seen before, never witnessed. There was a woman that was beating a rug, or maybe it was a rug or some type of maybe skin,
and there was a man standing next to a fire pit, and there was these huts. And I remember, now, of course, I was only about five, I remember thinking, why aren't there teepees back there? That was my thought. And this little boy turned around, and I don't know how, but I heard him speaking through the window. I was up, it's a colonial house. I was upstairs in the top level, and I was looking down, but for some reason, I could hear him clearly speaking. And he was speaking in his language, but I understood what he was saying. And we connected, and it was really cool. And I was very excited about that. And about 2 weeks after that incident, I am told that my neighbors was excavating some land because they were putting a, they were building a little barn for their tractor, and they found two skeletal remains with some pottery shards and some types of tools that Native Americans would use. And they found, they did have the Akron University come in and do an archaeological dig, and they found out that it was actually from the woodland period, which it was several thousand years old. And at that time, I understand that that was the oldest village that they found from in the Stark County area. So it was pretty intriguing, and of course, my parents didn't know what to think of me after all of that.
I would imagine. Do you think that, that what you were seeing and the boy you were interacting with, communicating with, do you think he was literally physically part of what was found there?
Okay, it's kind of a complicated question because there's a story about the boy. I ended up growing up with him, and he kept on, it seems like he was aging with me. We became good friends. I now understand he was my spirit guide. He still is. His name is Spotted Owl. And when I was about 30 years old, he showed me as his elder self. And he said the reason he showed me as a child is he didn't want to frighten me. And, you know, he taught me so much throughout the years and taught me about the spirit world. And I don't feel like he actually lived in the village. I think he utilized that opportunity to present himself.
Interesting. Very interesting. And how, so that's been going on most of your life, you've had this relationship.
Right. Now you got to understand, the way that I was brought up, it was different. My father is autistic, and my mother, she had a lot to do. She had to take care of a lot of things, you know, making sure everything was okay. And I was pretty isolated. I was alone quite a bit. So my best friend was the woods, was the animals in the woods. I would run through there, and I felt at home. I felt at peace, and really one with nature at a very young age. And so he was literally my best friend, and I saw him like I would see another, you know, like a person standing in front of me. That's how clear it was. But however, I knew I knew he wasn't physically here, and I know that's hard to understand. I just knew I had a friend, and he was a very good friend, and he really helped me feel not alone.
Wow. Well, that's a profound relationship, and has he continued to age with you? I mean, when you interact with him now, does he feel like an adult?
When he showed me that as his elder self, when I was around age 30, he had deep, deep wrinkles, and he appeared to be about 60, 65 years old, weathered, just a beautiful man. His face was so deep, and his eyes were just so compassionate. But now when I see him in my meditations or when I'm praying, sometimes he'll come through. I see him as about 40 years old. He seems to always show himself about that age now. And I guess that's just because that's the most comfortable I am with him, if that makes any sense. He just seems to be where I need him to be as far as what he's showing me in his age.
Interesting. Very interesting. Very, very strange, obviously.
It is. It's very strange, but it's very, for me, it's so comforting. And I learned so much from him throughout the years. A lot of the spirit or psychic training that I received was from him. He showed me and shared with me the way to help tap in and how to help people and express the gifts through my heart. And I'm so grateful for Spotted Owl. And then what was really cool was he introduced me to his guide, and that has been just amazing. Spirit Owl is his name, and since then I've really just enjoyed the totem, the owl, and the spirit totem, and that energy and what it brings forward. They're with me throughout every time I investigate any type of paranormal building, anytime I'm tapping in for helping a person over the phone through a reading. They are at least Spotted Owl is always with me.
And how do you, what form is he with you in?
It's like, how do I explain? It's a knowing. I always can ask Spotted Owl for help to help me decipher a message, and he's there to share with me what he picks up around a spirit. He helps me. He gives me that inside scoop, and it's like inside my mind's eye. I can see him. I can feel him. His energy.
Very interesting.
America's Most Haunted, The Secrets of Famous Paranormal Places is now an epic book from Berkeley Penguin. History, legends, investigations, interviews, and profiles of America's 10 most haunted hotspots by Eric Olson and haunted housewife Teresa Argy. Be sure to join us on Twitter and Facebook at AM Haunted, Pinterest at America's Most Haunted, and our website, americas-most-haunted.com. And here every week on America's Most Haunted Radio with all the top names in the paranormal field.
I'm Eric Olson with Laura Lynn. All right, Laura, what happened last night? You were just telling me about your drive.
Oh, the drive was interesting. We have a snowstorm, but I was over at the Ohio State Reformatory last night, the famous Mansfield Prison, and this is an amazing place. I don't know of any other place that I've been to that had so many different spirits trekking around there. But last night was the most quiet investigation there that I remember. It was, I spotted a couple spirits, and we seemed to get some hits right when I saw a lady. She was upstairs in the prison, and I saw her, and then somebody said hello. So we think we got a pretty good EVP there. And there was another spirit that was downstairs in the chapel that I kept on spotting. But other than that, it was just so quiet, and it felt so good there. Very interesting evening.
Huh. Well, you know that we selected the Ohio State Reformatory as number one in America's Most Haunted. So we are very, very familiar with that place. Interesting that it was quiet and generally a positive vibe, because when I've been there, I have certainly picked up on the mad creepiness. Do you think you were able to identify any of these spirits? That would really be of interest.
Well, I had a spirit encounter there many years ago that kicked my butt. It was bad. I got beat up from a spirit that was in, they called it, you know, the toilet room.
Oh, yes.
So in the back of that room, there's a little stairway that goes into a small little, I don't know, it's just like a little chamber room of some sort. And I was asked by the staff reformatory to go see what it was. They wanted to see if I could interpret what was happening, because apparently some women were getting hurt. So I went up there, and I found a man that was at the top of the stairway, and he was brutally angry at me for being there in his little room. he was yelling at me. He was calling my boyfriend at the time some nasty names. He was saying, get the hell out of here, or we're gonna, you know, have a problem. And I'm like, what's wrong? What, you know, he's like, just get out of here. And he's screaming, cussing. And, you know, I'm like, okay. And he says, if you come back, we're gonna do battle. So that's, of course, the short version of what happened. And so I went down and I was explaining everything to my friends that I was investigating with, and I explained everything to the staff. Well, one of the other staff members there, he wanted to see it for himself. And he was acting like he wasn't believing me. He kind of put me off, and I got angry at him, because, you know, they were the ones that asked me to go do this. I had this encounter, and, you know, here he is, you know, I guess just pressing it, and so I allowed myself to do something that I never do. I went up against the spirit, and I'm not one to do that. I feel like spirits should be left alone if they want to be left alone. So I went back and into this room, and behind me I could feel a pressure on my back, and then the pressure got stronger and stronger, and I thought, oh my gosh, somebody's going to get hurt. They're going to fall over me. I thought somebody was falling on my back. But then it went violent, and I was thrown into, pushed so severely into the porcelain on the floor. I ended up breaking the sinks and toilets with my hands, and my knee and my leg got caught into that, and actually ripped my jeans and ripped a big hole into my knee and leg. And I was pretty severely hurt. I had a hard time standing up. And I was a little bit dazed, very confused, and I stumbled over, looked back, I turned around towards that little room, and I kind of just stumbled up there and started screaming, why'd you do this to me? I realized it was him that pushed me, and I heard in my head so distinctly, I told you if we come back, we would do battle. Well, Eric, that completely psychic attack took me down for about 6 months. I went into a severe depression. And do you know Sherry Brake, Recco? Sherry Brake?
Sure.
Yeah. She's a very good friend of mine, and I called her and I explained, you know, everything that happened. I said, Sherry, I don't even know if I want to do this anymore for a living. I feel like I'm losing my mind here. He really took me down for a good 6 months. It took me so long to get over that. And I swore I would never, ever, ever go into that room. Now, that was probably about 6 years ago. And from that point forward, actually, I've been to the reformatory several times, and I would do readings for Sherry at her show, at the Dinner of the Ghost show, but I wouldn't go back into the areas where we would actually investigate. I would stay up at the small rooms in the front, or the party rooms. Well, last night's investigation was my first, and I actually went back in the room, and I just wanted to see, you know, I was just curious if he was still there. I didn't think I would do it, but I did, and I am pleased. I was really happy to find that I feel like he is not there any longer. I feel like whatever that was, who he was, I feel like he may have found peace, which is wonderful. I had the strong impression he was a guard, not an inmate.
Huh.
And I just, but this is the interesting part about it. Afterwards, I was speaking to the knight. He takes care of the reformatory at night. He's there to make sure that the groups that are there are okay and safe. And so anyhow, his name is Scott, and I was explaining everything to Scott, and Scott described the man to the T. I mean, I was saying what his face, he said, yes, and he's got this, and he knew exactly who it was, and he told me that he helped this man find peace. He's helped him cross over, and it just made me feel really good. And I really feel good about the prison now because of hearing him. I feel like, you know, there's somebody there to take care of those ghosts to make sure they find their peace.
Very interesting. Are we talking about Scott Sugel?
Yep. Yep.
We know Scott. He is in the book. One of his, the structure of the book is, of course, we included our own experiences, and Teresa in particular has had a number of experiences that are in the book, including in the toilet room. I'll get to that in a moment. But yeah, we took a tour. That was kind of the first thing we did when we were deciding how we were going to cover the reformatory, and that was a first chapter. That was the chapter that we actually used as our sample chapter. So that was the very first one that we did, and we were kind of figuring out how we're going to put all this together. And so we took a tour of the whole building with him, and he told us of his many experiences, including with who he thought to be a doctor there. There was a huge, intimidating doctor who did not put up with crap, who was there back in the prison days. And he apparently has lingered on, at least some of the time, as a spirit in the building. And regarding, and he was also punched in the residence area, in the what used to be where the warden and his family lived. He was literally punched so much so he doubled over and had to go to the doctor. So it was very strange trying to explain what had happened to him. So yeah, he's really one of the core people, of course, at the reformatory. Regarding that toilet room, the very first thing that ever happened, Teresa, and this is way, way back, this is maybe 10 years ago, I guess, or even more, she was there for just for the haunted attraction, the Halloween haunted attraction, and she was just walking by outside in the hallway of the toilet room, and there was someone who was just another customer, and he was just kind of kidding around and fooling around, and he had gone in that room, which I don't think was decorated or was, you know, part of the haunted attraction. He'd gone in there. There's not even a lock on the door. Well, he couldn't get out. He's pulling and pulling, and his friends start trying to help, and they're pushing and they're pulling. The store's got to open one way or another. Pushing and pulling and pushing and pulling. Nothing couldn't happen. Meanwhile, he's screaming and yelling louder and louder from within the room that something was coming toward him. Finally, when it reached this unbearable fever pitch, the door just opened.
Wow.
And he just staggered out and did not linger in that area. So, man, yeah, that place, there's all kinds of activity, and we covered the kind of the iconic Ghost Adventures episode. That was one of their more impactful ones, and they talked to former prisoner DJ Fly, and we discuss all that as well. Well, let's talk about your show, your upcoming show on Wednesday, and I know you've had some experiences actually with spirits in that building, which appears to be really quite haunted, and I see at the end of the show, which again, I get to MC. Oh boy, how exciting is that? This is going to be so much fun, that you're doing a ghost hunt afterwards. So maybe tell us a little about the show and then maybe some of the spirits that you have actually encountered in that building. And this is the Kent Stage in Kent, Ohio.
Right, the show is going to be several different types of readings. What we're going to have everybody do is sign a piece of paper, and we're going to put their name in a bowl so that we're going to be randomly picking names throughout the evening. And I'm going to do different types of readings, such as mediumship, aura readings, readings with pendulums, and I'm going to explain everything about the reading and how I'm tapping in, what it feels like, you know, how I process the information, and I'm going to share with the audience tips on how they can also learn ways so that they can tap in their self. I believe that we all have abilities, Eric. I just think that we need to kind of learn how to turn that on, how to turn that dial on a little bit or channel it in a little bit better. And so I'm going to talk about that throughout, and then I'm going to do readings throughout the audience, into the audience. I'm going to tap in or ask if there's any spirits that would just like me to bring a message to somebody. So there, we're going to have plenty of those type of experiences, too, where the audience members won't be coming up on a stage, but I'll be, you know, bringing it out into the audience. And then we're going to explore questions that people have. And it's just, we're going to go at a lot of different levels with it. It's going to be very interactive.
And when I introduce you, what kind of my main contribution, at least as I see it in advance, is I'm going to talk a little bit about some of these really recent developments in broadly speaking, the science field, so neuroscience and whatnot. And we're going to talk about how really very objective studies, this is all recent stuff. I mean, one of these is just weeks, you know, and months, and then and several of these other are just within the last few years. So, I mean, this really is an exciting time because there have now been very specific, well-reviewed and received within the community, not necessarily maybe the conclusions, but the techniques of these studies themselves saying that there is very tangible reason now to believe at least the possibility of the persistence, the existence of consciousness outside the brain, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, and then, of course, we have the whole other field going into physics, talking about the quantum theories, quantum entanglement. How is it possible that two particles, two electrons that could be literally on opposite ends of the universe, how is it that when you measure one, that impacts the other, wherever it may be, instantaneously or almost instantaneously, so fast, faster than the speed of light. So how is that information conveyed? And whatever that method is, whatever happens there, that certainly is the possible method whereby psychic information is shared, don't you think?
I absolutely feel that way. I am so excited about the new consciousness science studies that's coming forward and that's breaking out. We're in an exciting time because of the different technical scope that we can go into and what we can see now. There, what you were just talking about, the information channeling, and you know the fact that, you know, I believe that they're going to find that we are really all on the same grid. I believe that's what oneness is about. And I think in the next decade that it's going to be proven. It's going to be proven about this connection, and the spirit does exist and can relay this life into a next existence and a next. You know, it's so fascinating what's being revealed right now.
And really, all of this ties into nothing. I mean, it's things that are ancient traditions. Look at the Hindu, Buddhist traditions. They say we're all connected. It's all a web. It's all a fabric. Much more recently, but from the metaphysical standpoint, from Jung, Carl Jung, the great psychologist and philosopher, his theory about the collective subconscious, that we are all connected on the subconscious level, or a level below, I guess, the individual subconscious level. And on that, it's like we're all nodes popping up out of this great connected field. So there's lots of theory and theorizing that's been going on literally for thousands of years that some of this brand new science seems to be proving, or at least opening the door to. And I agree with you. It is a really, really exciting time to now have at least a framework, you know, to apply to what has to skills and abilities and activity and communication that, you know, for the most part has been pretty well written off and ridiculed by the scientific community. And yet it ties in so well to these ancient traditions and some of these brand new discoveries, and not even just in the same field. You know, we're talking physics, we're talking cosmology, we're talking neuroscience. So, wow, it really is an amazing time. Now, you're going to lead a ghost hunt after the show as well. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. We're going to have so much fun. What we're going to do is pull 10 people out of the audience to go into the underbelly of the Kent stage, and we're going to run through the tunnels and see what we can tap into the basement, all around. There's been so many different sightings and interesting spirit encounters throughout that stage. I do believe it's the most haunted building in Portage County. At least it's the most haunted that I have been in. I've been in a lot of buildings throughout the state of Ohio, but in Portage County, I know that is the top haunted building.
Now, you've had some experiences there already, haven't you?
I've had a lot of experiences there through the years. One of the strongest experiences I had, really, of my life was over at Kent Stage. I was in the basement. There was a group that decided they wanted to do what was called table tipping. Not much in table tipping. I think there's a lot of energy that people can do on their own that they're maybe not even realizing to make that table move the way it does, you know, shake and groove. However, you know, I went ahead with it, along with it, and I was tapping into this man named Daniel, and he was rather angry. And this table, Eric, it was probably about 30 to 40 pounds. It was one of those round spools that they put a piece of carpet on and made it a makeshift table. And so I didn't think we were going to get much action from that table anyhow because it was so heavy. Well, I was really surprised when it started rocking and shaking the way it did. And when Daniel came through, I understood he was very angry from the beginning. And I was asking him questions. I was asking him, you know, why he was so mad and what's going on. And he was explaining that his girlfriend was now gone. And what I found out was this was a brothel, and he had something to do with this woman that was part of the brothel. And he was angry because she crossed over and he was there and he had control over for many years. So anyhow, in the wake of this conversation, the table levitated, Eric. I've never seen anything like that in my life. It levitated about 3 to 4 inches off the ground. I was shocked. I looked under the table. I looked under to see if I could see anybody's feet moving, the knee kind of catching on, you know, somebody tricking. There was none of that going on. And I was like, Daniel, are you doing this? What's going on? Why are you so angry? And all of a sudden, the table just boom, right back onto the ground. And that was a frightening experience. And I was like, it was not only frightening just from the standpoint of how anything can have that much power, a spirit could have so much power to lift up this 30-pound table, but I thought one of our feet was going to get crushed. It was crazy.
It was startling all the way around. Yeah, I mean, that really is amazing. And I know what you mean. You know, that's one of the issues just kind of with the whole spirit board, you know, using a tool to communicate, is you don't know, and you can be absolutely unintentional, but subconsciously, you know, the mind has all kinds of powers, even that we're still unaware of, and that you know, you could be a person could be influencing the responses without even realizing that they are. I guess kind of like perhaps a poltergeist would work. The person may have no idea whatsoever that they've generated or summoned this thing, but sure. But to see that kind of influence on the physical world, wow, you know, something that heavy, and to have that really does give you pause, because my goodness, if they can do that, they can hurt you.
Sure. And you know, I wasn't so sure one of us wasn't going to get hurt that evening. I was a little bit taken back that I might be hurt because he was angry because I was the one responsible for his girlfriend leaving. So, but yeah, he showed his anger, that's for sure.
So do you think anger is an emotion that somehow you know, more than other emotions, can cause a spirit to linger, to be attached to a place or thing? Do you think that is has particular power?
Sure, I sure do. And I also believe that spirits will generate a lot of their energy to keep that going from us, from, you know, from the anger that we might have within us, even if we're not even aware of it, maybe from our cellular memory of the anger that we had that's deep in us. And I think what they do is they try to trigger that so that that emotion comes out, it flares out, and then they can feed on it to recharge their own battery. And, you know, because there is times like that, you know, of course I was scared when it happened. You know, it was something I've never seen or witnessed before. So they can, he could pull on that energy. And then I got angry because I felt a little bit manipulated, you know, and I was, you know, angry because I became frightened. So he, you know, I just feel like he can use that and to generate his own energy. Feed off of it.
Interesting. Now this is kind of going to be this will be a broad and I'm sure in some ways difficult question. I'm very interested just to get your basic thoughts on and just your, you know, your opinion on what is the structure of all this? How does all this work? You know, what is this realm that the spirits are in that can and do communicate? And then are there other levels and do they come and go within various levels? I'm just really curious to get your thoughts on, you know, kind of the whole structure of reality as someone who is tapping into levels that most people just can't get to.
Right. No, that's interesting. You said realm. That's one of my book titles. It's called Realm to Realm. And I do believe, Eric, that there's many dimensions. There's many time dimensions and spaces that I feel like we are tapping into at one time. I feel like what I understand is that our cell, that inner energy, that consciousness that we have will tag into different times and spaces, and perhaps even within our own dimension, many places at once that we're tagged into. And what I feel like happens as far as the spirit world, I have a problem, we call it crossing over, but I have a problem with that because I feel like it's within our own dimension framework that the spirits are at. I feel what happens is that their energy, their conscious energy, is slipping out of the body when death occurs. And that energy center through the memory, their memory core, is here. And that energy accentuates a need or a want to find life again. Okay? But in order to do that, they know that there's a almost like a, if you would, a biological need, even though this we're talking about spirit, there's a need, an inherent need to find peace or to find rest or to generate on the anger that they're festering depending on where they're at. So maybe in that essence, we could call that heaven or hell, okay? Reaching for a higher energy would be reaching for that heaven sphere, or being in their own existence or space of the misery would be reliving hell or being in hell. And what I feel happens is that the spirit, if they're looking for an elevated energy resource, what they're doing is they're finding ways to help themselves release the sadness, fears, and regrets. And I believe that's what an awakening is, or seeing the light, being in the light. Because my view is that a creator did create all of us, everything, that there was an initial creation that took place. And once they understand that creation, that's where the light happened. They are part of that creation, therefore they are part of that light. And once that realization takes place, I believe that we go into that cell or that energy source spirit goes into a realm of understanding and awakening. So I feel like what the realms actually initialize or I believe what it is real, realm of realization.
Very interesting. Wow. Well, that wasn't difficult for you. You clearly, that is something you've thought about. Amazing stuff. All right. Well, let's remind people that you and I get to participate. How fun is that? Are appearing at the Kent Stage in Kent, Ohio, and that is Wednesday, November 19th. What time does the show start?
It's 7 to 9 p.m.
Fantastic. I'm very, very excited about it, and I assume there are still tickets available?
Absolutely. The tickets are $20. You can get them at the box office.
All right, let's tell people how they can get a hold of you through your various outlets.
Okay, my website is the best way to get hold of me is angelreader.net. And through there, there's resources to book your own party, if you wish, or a reading, if you would like. I do personal readings or over the phone, and all the information, it can be found there.
Okay. Any social media you want to pass on, or is that all just through the site, too?
Yeah, Facebook, I'm Laura Lynn. You can just look up Laura Lynn in Akron, and there you'll find me. Just remember one N, and yeah, Facebook, I'm always on that pretty much every day, updating people.
Wonderful. Anything else we need to let people know?
Well, I'm gonna keep on bringing up more events, so just keep watching angelreader.net, and you'll always be in the know.
And we've also mentioned, of course, that you are an author. Let's give them the titles of your books.
Hey, I have ABCs of Psychic Development. That's my most popular book. That's a wonderful resource for people to. It's a workbook setting and a journal. And what I do is I start from the beginning, just giving very easy, simple concepts that people can tap into. But the neat thing about how the book is structured, we're going from where they are, so it's not going to be too easy for the people who's been involved with this for a long time, and it's not going to be too complicated for the people who are just getting started. It's a pretty cool concept how this was all written out. And then the other book that I have that is a niche interest for some is called Healing with Angel Rays, and it explains seven different levels of how to tap into the angels through your chakra systems, and it's a powerful resource for those who are wanting to explore how to utilize the angel consciousness so that, you know, on their journey. It's a beautiful book, how it's written, and how utilizes color vibration and also sound. And then I do have several CDs also on varying subjects that you can purchase through my website.
Fantastic. Now, of course, that brings up another question, because I just can't keep my mouth shut. How do you distinguish an angel from a different kind of entity?
Okay. Angels, from my understanding through spirit, was created by the Creator to help us on our journey. And then there's other reasons why angels are here for the universe. There's many, many different levels of angels. Some angels are here for nature. Some angels are here for the cosmos. Some for communication. There's very varying degrees of what an angel's purpose is. However, the angels that we communicate and that I speak of and wrote about in the Healing of the Angel Rays, they are here to help us on our journey. They were never human. There's only one exception to that, and that would be Metatron. Metatron was known as Enoch in the Bible, and God granted Enoch the energy to be an angel because of the purity of his life. But other than that, we do not know through angelology studies of any other human that ever became an angel. Therefore, it is a conscious state that is here to help the human body existence, body, mind, and soul on their journey.
Wow. Well, there's any number of amazing directions that we can go, and we'd love to have you back on the show again down the road and ask more questions and find out more about your adventures and journeys. But for now, that will be it. One more time, Laura Lynn, and I have the privilege of joining in as MC at the Kent Stage, 7 o'clock in Kent, Ohio, this Wednesday, which, if you're hearing this on Tuesday night, will be tomorrow night, the 19th of November. Subsequent shows will be listed on Laura's site. One more time, the website is angelreader.net. Thank you so much, Laura. Fascinating discussion. Really looking forward to seeing what you do live and seeing how you interact with people in this manner. I am astonished by the gift and your ability to wield it in such a positive manner.
Thank you, Eric. This has been a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to you. I'm really thrilled that you volunteered, and I think that is just going to be such a hit. We're gonna really help people understand to a new level what's happening within themselves and around them. It's going to be a beautiful evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Many a sock will be knocked off.
Yes.
Okay, thanks, Laura. We'll talk to you real soon.
All right, great. Thank you, Eric. Bye.
Record. Yes, we are recording. 3, 2, 1. I'm Eric Olson for America's Most Haunted. We are speaking with world-renowned psychic Laura Lynn. All right.